Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 13, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The United Kingdom imposes sanctions on six businesses belonging to Sudan's army and the paramilitary rapid support forces.
Well, what we know from our investigations at the Sentry is that the companies are the front and sometimes the back end as well for the financing of the conflict in Sudan.
South Sudan's opposition calls for the resignation of the country's chief justice. Uganda rejects ICC torture allegations. Nigerian activists express alarm over the burning of a vessel loaded with stolen crude oil. New anti-government protests in Kenya turned violent on Wednesday.
The protesters were anything but peaceful. They have morphed into demonstrations which are unarmed and peaceful into hooliganism and riots. We have lost 9 lives today.
And political parties in Guinea-Conakry want to know the exact dates that a referendum and presidential elections would be held. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Kingdom on Wednesday imposed sanctions on 6 businesses belonging to the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces to block the flow of money into fighting between the 2 military factions. For a closer look at the move, VOA's John Tanza reached Oliver Winridge in London, who is a senior advisor at the investigative group, The Sentry, and who put out a statement welcoming the move.
Well, what we know from our investigations at The Sentry is that the companies, both RSF and Sudanese Armed Forces companies, are the front and sometimes the back end as well for the financing of the conflict in Sudan. Both RSF and SAF have enormous corporate structures that help fund the conflict. And so these 6 companies are what is, I hope, the start of significant financial tools of pressure being imposed on both parties.
A similar move was also done by the U.S. government more than a month ago when it sanctioned companies belonging to both warring parties. How effective are these sanctions if you look at it without regional cooperation from countries where the immediate interests of these generals are?
It's a very good question, John. I mean, these sanctions and the U.S. sanctions last month will prevent these businesses and any associated businesses that are controlled or run by these entities from accessing the U.S. dollar or the British pound. So we will see an immediate freezing of any assets that are held in the U.S. or in the U.K. by these businesses. But as you say, this action is only as good as the action that follows. What's required will be additional sanctions and additional work within the region to ensure that these sanctions bite.
As we talk about this development, the Sudanese people want the guns silenced, and it's not the time now for, half measures that have not worked well in the past. I mean, this is according to some Sudanese who just spoke to us when this news broke out. They're saying sanctions have not helped any government in Sudan to respond to the needs or to respond to the calls from the West. What more should be done to stop this violence that has killed thousands of people and displaced millions?
I think that what we're looking at now is hopefully the start of concerted, coordinated efforts by the international community and regional partners to actually target the financing behind this conflict. What these sanctions do is they begin to kick off the corporate networks, the corporate structures that are fueling both the RSF and the Sudanese armed forces. And so it's not a silver bullet. It's not the only answer to the conflict. But what we're hoping is that by these sanctions and further targeted network sanctions on individuals and, in this case, companies, we can begin to strangle the financing behind the conflict. But like you say, John, this is only one element of what needs to be a comprehensive regional and international move towards the end of this conflict and bringing these warring parties to the negotiating table.
That was Oliver Whitridge, a senior advisor at the investigative group, The Sentry. He was speaking from London with VOA's John Tanza. New anti-government protests in Kenya turned violent yesterday, Wednesday, between police and protesters. Reports say protesters vandalized offices and set fires in some parts of the capital, Nairobi. The Kenya National Newspaper reports that Interior Cabinet Secretary Kithure Kindiki has vowed that the planners and executives of the crimes would face the law. The protests are led by opposition leader Raila Odinga over the high cost of living. Gabriel Mutuma is a policy and governance analyst. He tells me the protests were anything but peaceful, as 9 people were killed.
First of all, the protests in Kenya have already morphed. They are no longer protests because our protests have covered very well in the Constitution, Article 37, that our protests and demonstrations and pickets should actually be unarmed and peaceful. What we have seen today was not armed, was not peaceful, and most of them was unarmed. We saw riots and we saw hooliganism. That is what it was today.
The protests are being sponsored by opposition leader Raila Odinga. He has described the protest as peaceful. What do you make of that, first of all, and what does he want?
Well, the protesters were anything but peaceful. If you've been following on the media, you saw a new road, the Nairobi Expressway, which has been heavily damaged. You saw supermarkets that have been vandalized. You saw vehicles that were damaged. We have lost 9 lives today. That is not a peaceful demonstration where people lose lives. So, yes, they have actually been sponsored by Honorable Raila Odinga, and to an extent, people are also mentioning Uhuru Kenyatta is one of the people who are contributing, or they are supporting these demonstrations. But as you can see, like I've told you, they have morphed into demonstrations which are unarmed and peaceful into hooliganism and riots. That's what Kenyans are concerned about.
How is the Ruto government dealing with these protests? I was reading an article, the Interior Cabinet Secretary Kindiki. He was quoted as saying that the planners and executors of crimes would face the law. How is the government dealing with the protests?
Actually, that's a very good question. Anytime you move from the Article 37 of our Constitution, which clearly stipulates what demonstrations should be, if it goes above that and lives are lost and property are damaged and the shops and supermarkets are vandalized, you institute what the government is doing. They are actually looking around the possibility of bringing the people who are seen vandalizing and people who are caught by the police engaging in acts of violence and hooliganism, they'll be brought to book. That is exactly what the Cabinet Secretary for Interior was discussing. And so we expect there to be a lot of roughing up of the people who are doing all these damages, and we expect them to be hauled to court anytime from now.
Of course, Odinga said Wednesday that he was canceling one of the protests because, according to him, he received intelligence that the ruling Kenya Kwanza was planning to send goons to attack what he called peaceful protests. So who is right?
James, that is the price of our instrument. It's become a he said, she said. But the person who is hurting is the person who is unable to open their business. And when they open that business, the business is vandalized and looted. We have school children who have not gone to school. We have so many people who are supposed to be productive and haven't gone to work. They have not done so. On August 7th, we lost 6 lives. Today, we've lost 9 lives. That is one too many.
Gabriel Mutuma is a policy and governance analyst. He was speaking with us from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Uganda's government is rejecting claims that top officials, including President Yoweri Museveni and his son, were responsible for the torture of political opponents. The International Criminal Court this week received testimony from hundreds of Ugandans who say they were tortured by officials. A government spokesperson called it attention-seeking propaganda, as Halima Athumani reports from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Uganda's opposition party, the National Unity Platform, says they want justice for people who allege they were tortured by the Ugandan government. Speaking to VOA, NUP spokesman Joel Senyonyi said the party supports the many Ugandans who have provided testimonies in a case being presented to the International Criminal Court against top government officials. The case was recently presented by Bruce Afran, a Princeton, New Jersey-based lawyer whose team gathered the testimonies. The accusations stem from Uganda's 2021 elections. After the elections, several video clips shared on social media allegedly showed security officials torturing and in some cases firing live bullets at protesters. 54 people were killed during the campaign period, mostly in clashes between police and protesters after authorities stopped President Museveni's challenger, opposition leader Bobi Wine, from campaigning in eastern Uganda. A number of NUP activists were also arrested. President Museveni condemned the killings but stated that some terrorists had been killed. Senyonyi says the president's words showed that he was responsible for the arrests and torture.
After that statement that he made, who has been called to order? How many people have been taken to jail or to court for torturing Ugandans? Two, he's the same person after the Arua incident. He said this Bobi Wine and others, they were beaten properly, clearly showing he is the one who commanded all of this.
In August 2018, while campaigning for an opposition candidate in Arua district, Wine narrowly escaped death when the driver of his car was shot and killed. The shooting happened after opposition supporters allegedly stormed the president's vehicle. Among those who have given testimony in the case submitted to the ICC is writer Kakwenza Rukirabashaija, M70 critic who fled Uganda shortly after his third arrest. After his release, Rukirabashaija posted pictures of his scarred body, saying he had been tortured and a pair of pliers used to pluck not just his nails, but the skin between his thighs. Farouk Chirunda, Museveni's deputy presidential press secretary, says the NUP party has not sufficiently defended its allegations before the Uganda Human Rights Commission.
It's propaganda. They have filed before in the Uganda Human Rights Commission, where they furnished a list of the said torture victims. But after making thorough investigations by Uganda Human Rights Commission, it was found out that the list was fake. So it is political. The actors in that case are seeking for the attention of the international community.
26 top government officials are accused of participating in, aiding, and abetting the detention and torture of opposition supporters during Uganda's 2021 election. The ICC has not indicated whether it will take up the case. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 13. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. VOA's English to Africa service celebrates its 60th anniversary on August 4th. Help us celebrate by sharing your thoughts on our programs. Send a voice message or text to this WhatsApp number, +1 202 258 3076. That's +1 202 258 3076. Tell us what your favorite program is, or let us know about a particular news story that you connected with. Recall a favorite memory about VOA Africa, and tell us what stories you think we should cover or how we can improve. The WhatsApp number again is +1 202 258 3076. Again, +1 202 258 3076. We thank you for 60 years of support. The Sudan People's Liberation Movement, in opposition also known as SPLMIO, and the group known as the Other Political Parties, are calling on South Sudan's Chief Justice Chan Rich Madot to resign. The SPLMIO Director for Information says Chief Justice Madot has shown bias towards one signatory of the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, Mayang David Mayar reports from Juba.
A photo of Chief Justice Chan Rich Madot at a political rally organized by President Salva Kiir's ruling party, the Sudan's People Liberation Movement, or SPLM, in WOW has been making rounds on the social media. The photo has sparked loud reactions from some of the parties that signed the 2018 peace agreement. Pogbot Balwang is the director of information at the Sudan's People's Liberation Movement in Opposition, or SPLMIO, a group loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar. Balwang says, by attending President Kiir's endorsement rally in Western Bahrel Ghazali State a week ago, Chief Justice Chanrech Madut has shown his true political color.
In the event, if there was any disagreement between the parties when the election is conducted, how could he resolve or make a verdict on this matter while he's biased because he's supporting one party? So we believe in such positions, we need someone who's neutral.
The 2018 revitalized peace agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan has some components on judicial reforms in the country ahead of elections. Balwang says those judicial reforms should start with the removal of Chief Justice Chanrech Madut from office.
We will call for the president to, you know, replace him with another member, a South Sudanese member, who is neutral and who will ensure that he will remain neutral as that position required.
Peter Mayen Majungdit, member of parliament and chairman of a group known as Other Political Parties, says Kenya's recent contested elections has some lessons for South Sudanese politicians.
The judiciary must be independent, not only just from political affairs, but even from the executive itself.
VOA contacted Chief Justice Madut for comment on the allegations of his biasness toward President Kiir's party, but he declined to comment on record. Kwal Atimbol is the SPLM Secretary for Parliamentary and Executive Caucuses. Bol admitted that Chief Justice Chanrech Madut attended President Kiir's rally in Wau 1 week ago.
He went to Wau not because he is a member of the SPLM. He went to Wau as part of a delegation of President Salva Kiir. Anybody can attend that, including the other political party. They were there also.
South Sudan is scheduled to hold its first general elections in December 2024. For VOA News, I am Manyang David Mayer in Juba.
Environmental activists in Nigeria are raising alarm after the military burned a ship with more than 800,000 liters of stolen crude oil. Nigerian officials said the ship was caught smuggling the oil to Cameroon and was destroyed to set an example to other would-be criminals. But critics point out the damage to the ecology and question the circumstances of the ship's interception by a controversial security outfit run by a former militant leader. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigeria's National Petroleum Company Limited, or NNPC, said the oil was stolen from a well in southwest Ondo State and that the vessel had operated undetected for up to 12 years. Officials said the vessel had no documentation to justify the cargo it was carrying. The discovery was the latest in a flurry of oil busts by NNPC contractor Tanita Security Services, a company run by former militant and oil smuggler Government Ekwemupolo, also known as Tompolo. A military helicopter operated by the Nigerian military's Joint Task Force Operation Delta Safe on Tuesday bombarded the vessel, dumping its content into the water. The measure will serve as a deterrent to oil thieves, NNPC officials said, but environmentalists say authorities need to find other ways of handling looted oil without harming nature. Olumide Idowu is the executive director of the International Climate Change Development Initiative.
It actually jeopardizes the source of drinking water and agricultural irrigation. And this contamination can also affect our aquatic ecosystem and disturb the balance of plant and animal population.
Nigerian authorities have been struggling to stem oil theft from pipelines and wells in the Niger Delta region for decades. The trend is a major issue for new President Bola Tinubu, who has been making drastic economic changes in a bid to improve the country's economy, including ending expensive fuel subsidies. In April, Nigeria Extractive Industries Transparency Initiative said the country lost about $46 billion to oil theft in 12 years. Emmanuel Afimia, owner of oil and gas consulting firm Enermix Consulting, says destruction of the vessel could make prosecution of offenders more challenging.
This vessel has been parading the Nigerian waters and stealing crude oil for like 12 years. You need to ask, what quantity have they stolen so far? And what is the monetary value of that? A lot of questions need to be asked.
Nigerian government made a deal August last year with Tanita and says months of intense crackdown on oil thieves have significantly reduced the scale of oil theft in the oil-rich Niger Delta. In October, security operatives were criticized for burning another vessel carrying stolen oil. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Leaders of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, are expressing concern about what they called the lack of cooperation the body's mediators are receiving from the region's three transitional governments, Burkina Faso, Guinea, and Mali. The three countries are led by military governments and are in transition to democratic rule. At their summit in Guinea-Bissau this week, ECOWAS leaders urged the three countries to adhere to the agreed 24-month transition timetable. Fayyami Limuno is the opposition leader of the Liberal Bloc Party in Guinea. He says the military junta has assured the country that the transition timetable is being respected. However, he tells me that political parties want to know the exact dates that a referendum and local and presidential elections would be held.
We can say that according to the government and the junta, every time they communicate, they've been telling that the calendar set up for the return to the constitutional life in this country, the timetable is being respected. They are on time. On the other side, the political and the social actors are basically asking themselves the same questions ECOWAS is been asking. So at this time, what political and social actors have been asking is, for example, at which dates precisely the referendum is going to be held and when we can expect the local elections, the legislative elections, the presidential elections.
According to the communique I'm reading, it seems that maybe ECOWAS is not happy about how things are going in not only Guinea, but Mali and Burkina Faso. So you are saying that the Guinean authorities are claiming that the transition process is on time. ECOWAS is saying it wants these three countries to stand or remain with the 24-month transition process. That is, by next year, there should be elections.
Yeah, I mean, even ourselves, that is what we are expecting, because basically we were in the process of defining the calendar for this transitional period. You remember at one point, many political coalitions and social organizations had started suggesting or proposing the timetable. Some were talking about 3 years, 3 years and a half. Other were talking about 2 years or 2 years and a half. And when all that was analyzed, we came up with a 3 years period. But when the ECOWAS experts come to negotiate with the government and the junta, they agree on the 24 months. So ourselves, we are also expecting those 24 months to be respected.
Fayyami Limuno is the leader of the Liberal Bloc Party of Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. And that's it for this Thursday, July 13th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Butte in Washington saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.
Hey. Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.